Tonight's shir, Parshas Lech Lecha. We begin with a story that is from Montreal, Canada, by a Yid by the name of Moshe. And he used to live quite a distance from shul, so as many people do. I think we mentioned it in the past also, that some people drive their car to shul on Friday for before Shabbos and park by the shul and come back. Fine. So every week Moshe would do this. 1 week, parks his car, walking into shul, and who approaches him? Chaim, another one of the mispalim there in the shul. And he asks for a favor. He says, Moshe, a big favor to ask of you. You know, as you know, I'm in Hatzala, and of course I need a vehicle at my disposal, you know, if I get a call. So this afternoon my motorcycle broke down on me, and I have no way of getting around, and now it's Shabbos, and I'm in case I get a call, you know, I don't have a car at my disposal, or a bike or something. So I was wondering if you could do me a favor and lend me your car. You know, I'll put the keys in my shtender just in case, I happen to get a call, a telecall, I can take your car. So Moshe heard this, and he was thinking, wasn't so thrilled with the idea, for a few reasons. First of all, it was a new car that he had, and it was a fancy new car. And he knew, you know, a guy takes it out for a telecall, he's not so careful how he drive, you know, he just takes speeds in it, you know, so wasn't so comfortable giving it to him for that one reason. And another thing, it has an alarm system because it's an expensive car, and he's not going to put on the alarm system if he uses it because it's Shabbos, so he can't do anything, it's not pikuach nefesh, so he's not going to like make sure the alarm goes on when he runs out of the car and this and that, whatever. So, because he was uncomfortable, but Mitzad Sheni, he was just, you know, quickly going through his mind. Okay, you know, I mean, he wants it for Hatzala, you know, it's hard to say no. So in the end, Moshe put his hands in his pocket, took out his keys, and he said, "Here, Chaim," and he gave him the car keys. Right, puts it in the shtender, and all is good. So, sure enough, during the davening, middle of Maariv on Leil Shabbos, Chaim the Hatzala man gets a call, and he hears on his beeper goes off, was that whatever, and he hears that emergency situation, that there is a little baby, 1.5-year-old baby, that's swallowed like a marble or whatever, and he's choking. So of course time is of the essence, and he grabs the keys, you know, from Moshe's car, and zips out of the shul, jumps in the car, arrives at the scene of the thing, and sure enough, he sees the baby, 1.5-year-old kid. He's like choking, turning it on blue, and very mummish. So he quickly acts as his thing, his Hatzala thing, and Ruch Hashem, he was able to dislodge the marble, whatever it was, and the kid was breathing again. So afterwards, the doctor, you know, examined the kid and said to Chaim, the Hatzala guy, said, "Listen, you should know, if you would have come like a minute later, it would have been tragic." Which came mamish in the nick of time. So it ended up that he said, "You see, Moshe, you know, he was clearing, should I give the car, not give the car?" But it was all because he, you know, gave him his nice new car. He was able to get there on time and save the kid's life. But the climax of the story is, who was this baby, 1.5-year-old baby? It was Moshe, the Bala Rechav's son. So little did Moshe know, when he was giving his car, his mom was going to save his own child's life. Next is a story. Interestingly, our last year's series was from Rav Galinsky, so he brings here a story also from Rav Galinsky. I don't remember whether he mentioned it last year, but if so, it'll be a review. The story goes back during the time of the war, where Rav Galinsky was sent to Siberia. And during his stay there, he had to go through a 40-day like starvation. They starved him for like a period of 40 days. He had a little bit to eat, obviously, but as a conditions of starvation. So finally, the 40 days were over, and they were able to eat again. So they gave them some hot soup to break the fast, so to speak. So Rav Galinsky had this bowl of soup in front of him, and just then this yid comes up to him, and he looked terrible. He was still in the fast mode, and he was still fasting, the other guy, the other yid, and he had no food, and he was starving to death, and he needed something, you know. And this guy's name was Cholev. His name was Cholev. So he comes up to Rav Galinsky, looks at him like, "Hi, you know, please, you know, give me some of your soup." So Rav Galinsky didn't know what to do, because on the one hand, you know, this guy's starving. He's also starving; hasn't eaten in 40 days. You know, he's like, he needed the soup also pretty badly. So he was back and forth in his mind. What should he do? Give the guy soup? Not give the guy soup? So in the end, he said to himself, "Yankele, yankele." He says, How can you sit here and make a bracha and eat the soup in front of this guy who's starving? Would you even enjoy your soup?" So he, in fact, mevater, and he gave this guy whole of his soup, and who enjoyed it tremendously. And okay, Baruch Hashem, in the end, Rav Galinsky survived the war, and eventually, as we know, made it to Eretz Yisrael. The story continues years later, as in fact, once he came to Israel, because a big Marbitz Torah here, etc. At the time, there was a large aliyah from the Sephardi countries, the Eidos HaMizrach. And the government set up these like camps, whatever, for them. And as we know, they tried to take the Yiddishkeit away from them. And they locked them up, mamash, in these camps, and to try to, you know, cut off their pay, yes, and this, try to get rid of their Yiddishkeit. So, the word got out, of course, that the parents of, you know, that had children there, they wanted their children to have a Haredi education, of course. But, you know, the government, you know, nothing doing. So, Chazon Ish was working very strong to try to somehow get these kids into have them a good Jewish education. So he called in Rav Galinsky one day, and he says, "I have a mission for you," as Anish tells him. "So I want you to go into this certain one of these camps and make a list of all the, you know, mamash, the names and Tudat Zehut or whatever, all the parents who would like their children to have a like Haredi education, and write it down and give me a list." So, fine. So, Galinsky takes another fellow with him, Rechaver, and he goes to this camp, and he saw nothing doing. He can't even get in. It was like almost locked, the fence around it, and key and bolt, and no, he can't get in. Nobody can get in. So, he went back to the Chazon Ish, and he says, "Sorry, we can't do it." He says, "What happened?" He says, "I can't get in. It's locked up." So, Chazon Ish said, "Okay, so what?" So, he said, dig a ditch underneath the fence, you know, a tunnel, and dig down and come up and go, what's the big deal?" So, fine. So, Galinsky takes this fellow, who is later on and now is a big posek in Eretz Yisrael. Didn't mention any names, though, but fine. So, he went, he dug his tunnel, came up into the camp. So, of course, they looked like they didn't belong there. And sure enough, a couple of called the madrichim, like counselors of the camp, they caught them, and they said, "What are you doing here?" Whatever. So, as it happened, how they used to work is that they had these counselors that spoke Yiddish. They only spoke Yiddish, and the kids are from Sephardi country, didn't know, you know, Yiddish. They did a dafka, didn't want them to have any connection with these the madrichim, to have any the councils with the people in the camp, and so they dafka had them, you know, knew that they couldn't, you know, speak the same language. They couldn't speak to people in the camp, and that the people in the camp couldn't understand. Didn't want them to be able to understand the counselors when they spoke amongst each other. So they were Yiddish speakers, and the people, of course, were from Sephardi, you know, Sephardi country. So what happens Rav Galinsky said that he pretended like he didn't know Yiddish. Of course, that was his mother tongue, Sama, but he pretended like he didn't know. What are you talking about? Oh, I don't speak Yiddish, you know. And they're speaking to each other, counselors, thinking what to do with these guys. And so in the meantime, they stand by the side, and they're thinking, well, you know, these two counselors, what should we do with these guys that we found? How should we get rid of them? What should we do? Whatever. So Rav Galinsky, who knew, of course, Yiddish, was listening, and what were they saying? And amongst their discussion, he hears them say, one says to the other, I guess we'll just wait till Cholev comes and see what he decides to do. So Rav Galinsky hears that name, Cholev. He says, it's a weird name. He says, I know that name from somewhere. He's breaking his head. And he says, yeah, of course. That was the guy that I in Siberia that I gave my soup to. So, sure enough, a few minutes later, this guy Cholev shows up, and he happened to be one of the head counselors of the camp. So he comes up, and he sees Rav Galinsky, and he goes, oh, Ryanko, he comes up to him, and he hugs him. He says, wow, I haven't seen you in so long, whatever. So he says, well, you have a problem? He says, what, you want to know how to get out of the camp? I can help you get out if you need to get out. So Rav Galinsky was thinking to himself, to get out, I can do it myself, you know, that's not a problem. So he figured, okay, now maybe I should take advantage of maybe if, you know, he owes me one, you know. And so he said, you know, can I speak to you privately, whatever. He takes him over to the side, and he says, you know, might as well go for the gusto. And he tells him the story. He goes, listen, I need a list of all the families over here who would like Haredi education for their kids. So he was like, what? You know, of all the things to ask, Haredi, you know. But he, you know, he's a Yid, and he knows he really owed Rav Galinsky one. And he said, fine. He says, wait here, after the counselors leave, I'll take care of it. So they left, and then a few minutes later, he comes back, and he had a list of 65 families that wanted education for their kids. And Rav Galinsky, you know, got out of the camp, went back to the Chazon Ish with the list. The Chazon Ish brought it to the authority, whoever was able to pull strings. And sure enough, a majority of these families were able to have their kids have a good Jewish education, and eventually grew up and were led Torah lives. So he brings down, you see, you know, all these families that are, you know, following the Torah and Yira, where did it all come from? Because Rav Galinsky gave a soup to this guy. And had he not given them soup, who knows what would have happened to these families. So it was this act of chesed. Who would have thought that years later what was going to come of this act of chesed? Another, let's call it a mashal, brings here that there was a bacher that was very talented in art. He was like in painting, whatever, drawing, painting, and he decided that he was going to take classes from a top-notch artist who had paintings in galleries and things. So he took lessons from him, and he got to what he thought was a half-decent level in painting. So this teacher of his constantly tried to, you know, give him encouragement, and he told them that every time you paint, you should try to get feedback from people. But people tell you this isn't good, that's good, you know, to help you improve. Okay, so one day this Bacher decides to make a nice painting of, he goes up north to the Galil, and he sees a nice waterfall and a backdrop and a thing in the forest. He paints a nice picture, at least what he thought was a nice picture. So he takes this painting, and then he brings it home, and he starts looking at it. He's not sure, is it really good, is it not good? So he remembered what his teacher told him, that you should try to, you know, ask people to comment to it. So what did he decide to do? He brought it to the Tayelet where he lives, and the boardwalk near where he lives, and he set it up on an easel, and he put up a little sign. And he says the following, Shalom Lechem. He says, I'm a starting, you know, beginner in artist, and learning how to paint, and I painted this picture. He says, you'll notice I left here a magic marker. And I'd like you to, if you see anything that is, needs improvement or change or whatever, please make an X over there. So he leaves it there, and that was the sign with the magic marker by the easel with his painting. So he comes back the next day, and he can't believe what he sees. The entire painting is marked up, an X over here, an X over there, and the whole thing is full of X's. And he could tell it wasn't like one person came along and, you know, wanted to ruin his painting. He could tell it was different people made, you know, different X's in different places, but the whole thing was covered with X's. So he was distraught. He says, after all that work, he says, maybe I should just give up painting. Anyways, so what did he do? He went to his teacher, and he said, I told him the story, look what happened, I invested so much time and effort in this painting, and I wanted some, like you said, I should get some critique. What did I get? The whole thing's full of X's, look. So the teacher said, didn't say anything, he said, listen, go and make me another painting like this. It's very similar to this one, and fine. So he works on another painting, brings it to the teacher. Teacher says, okay, now come with me. He went to the boardwalk. He set it up on an easel. And this time, though, he didn't put a magic marker. He instead put some paints and brushes and put a sign and said, Shalom Lechem, I'm a beginning painter. And I painted this picture. And anybody that sees anything wrong, please, you can fix it. Here are the paints, here are the brushes, please fix it up for me. Fine, so he leaves it there, he comes back the next day, and what? Nothing's touched. The paints are still there, the brush is still there, unused, the painting is there as it was. So the teacher said, what's the muska now? What's the conclusion? It's very easy to criticize. Make it, oh, this is no good, that's no good, X here, X here. To make X's, very easy to make X's. Says what the kunst is you want to criticize, fine, but make sure you along to criticize comes to be able to fix up what you see is wrong. And he says that people are not so quick to do, make a comments left and right, but fix things up not so quick. He says, of course, a lesson in life as well. That, you know, with teachers, with parents, with couples, whatever, well, it's very easy to criticize, but you have to realize that the most important thing is not to criticize, but you have something, see something wrong, so do something about it. That's what's asked of us. Okay. It's a story brings. There was a Talmud Chacham that he was osik in Harbatzas Torah for young people, try to get him, bring him to Yiddishkeit, whatever. And he would go to different moshavim, kibbutzim, whatever, and trying to machazik, and he was very successful. So, about 2 years ago, he decided that he was going to go to this other moshav he heard about, that they're very, very weak in their Yiddishkeit, to mechazik them. So, what happened? Somehow, he had no success in this place. He tried this, he tried that, and organized shiurim, and yanim, whatever, nothing. It was very strange. As hard as he tried, and as much as effort he put in, nothing. So, he didn't know what to do, so he went through Aaron Lipsteinman and told him the story, and he said, what should I do? So Rav Aaron Leib said, Titpalel. Davin. Fine. So he took that Horah seriously, and he davened with a lot of fervor that Hashem should help him be successful in this moshav. So he was mekabel on himself a tainis. He went to the coastal of Moravi, and for hours he stood there saying tillum and crying, whatever, that Hashem should somehow help him bring some Yiddishkeit to this moshav. Okay. He comes home late at night, and after all his davening and tillum, and he just casually, just to you know, relax a little bit, he pulls out a sefer randomly from his library, and he opens it up just again randomly, and his eye catches the following story. There was a shaila that was brought to Rav Yashiv. What was the story? There was an avreich, Talmud Chacham, that was in learning in Lakewood, New Jersey, Shiva in Lakewood, and he was offered a job to become a rav in a certain kahila, a small town or whatever there in America. And he thought it was a good opportunity to mechazik the place and whatever. So he says, fine. He decided to take the job. So after he accepted the job, he heard that this place somehow is no hatzlacha. He says he's not the first rav. There's been rav after rav after rav to come there, and nobody's able to do anything to the place. So this fellow didn't face him. He says, okay, so this is a good challenge, you know. And he wanted to go for the challenge. And he came with a lot of energy and, you know, comes to this in the Kahila. And he has dreams of starting a Talmud Torah and maybe yeshiva there, call all this, whatever. He's all excited. So he starts getting into it or whatever. And lo and behold, whatever happened to the previous Rabbanim happened to him as well. Nothing. Couldn't get some minyanim going. Couldn't get nothing. Tried a Talmud Torah, forget nothing, yeshiva, nothing to mention. Ephes came up with nothing. And he couldn't understand it, because not like he was lazy, you know, he was a guy with a lot of energy, Dafka. And he just couldn't. So he thought that, you know, he felt like there's something like taboo, you know, something wrong with this place, because why is it that nobody was able to bring Yiddishkeit, and you know, and specifically him, he knows he's putting in the effort, he knows he's talented, and still nothing. He said there must be something wrong here in the place. So he decided to, before he goes further, to do some investigation. So he looked into the journals, you know, of the place, what happened, history of the place, and sure enough, it didn't take too long, he came up with something. What did he come up with? That many years ago, there was a Rav Talmud Chacham, whatever, it was the Rav of the Kehila, and there were a few people in the Kehila that hated the Rav, and they wanted to do something like bad to him, right? So what did they do to try to convince him to leave the place? They sent him a mishloach manot. So mishloach manot, they, you know, look very nice, whatever, fancy basket, whatever, fruit, foods. But in the mishloach manot, they put a couple of mice. So it was delivered to the house, and the Rebbetzin, you know, the Rav's wife, you know, says, oh, wow, beautiful mishloach manot, whenever she opens it up, and all of a sudden these mice jump out at her. And you can imagine, she fainted right on the spot. And not only that, that was bad enough, okay, she fainted, but Mamish left a scar, and she ended up the rest of her life in a mental institution because of that incident. Anyways, needless to say, the Rav, of course, did leave the place, and from that day on, that the place never was the whole Yiddishkeit in that place, you know, dropped and was never able to be rebuilt from that moment on. So the you know, this Talmud Chacham says, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if this is, you know, it's no coincidence that this thing happened, and since then there's no Yiddishkeit in this place. It's like you know, it's scarred from this Zion Rav, you know, that happened years ago. So he thought, well, what should we do? Of course, you know, Rav's not alive anymore, as you know, many years ago, but maybe we should go to the kever and ask Mechila. So, fine. So that's what he did. He got together a group of people to go to the kever. So they had made up, they're going to go on such and such a date, you know, drive out to the Beis HaKfaras. So what happens that morning, that they're about to drive out to the basic forest, there's a snowstorm. Big snowstorm, and they couldn't go. Okay, so they couldn't go, we'll go another time. Fine, so they set a date for another time when everybody's available to go, the minion. And it was a nice sunny day, Oh, good, so I'll be able to go. And they got ready. And just as they're about to leave, all of a sudden the winds start up out of the blue, terrible weather conditions. We're not able to go again. So now he's like, oh, what's going on? This is too much. So he sent a letter to Rav Elyashiv. And he asked him, like, what's going on over here? So Rav Elyashiv said that since, you know, this terrible Bizayin of Torah happened to this Kehila, even though it was many years ago, it's effect, and you have to, you know, really try to, you know, ask Mechila from the Rav. You have to, you know, try to go to the basic forest, you know, whatever it means, you got to do it. And to Mekabal, the people have to Mekabal on myself to Mechabed the Talmidei Chachami. Fine, so the Hurrah came from Rav Elyashiv. He gathered the community together, and he says, we got to do something. So on Shivasar Betamuz, this is in Tavshin Samech Tet, was 6 years ago, they had a Tzeres Tshuva Yisorus in the shul of the Kehila, and afterwards, sure enough, they were Matzliach this time, everybody in the Kehila, they went to the Beis HaKfaras, and they asked Mechila from the Rav and the Rebbetzin, they were buried there, and they gave some Musar Shmuz at the Kever, whatever, that's that. And unbelievable. From that moment on, everything changed around, and they had new trouble getting minyanim together. Now they've got a nice big minyan. Not only that, they had a few minyanim running, and they just started shiurim for the men and for the women and the children, and there was now kol and the mamisha. The whole thing changed around, and now they were had a very lively Torah community. And when they told this to Rav Elyashiv, he biyamaran et tzviut ritzono. He was very happy to hear that everything worked out for the best. Anyway, so we see from here that somehow a scar can be left when there's a bizarre in the Torah. So back to our original story. So here's our fellow here in Eretz Yisrael, who we said was who asked Rav Steinman what to do. The daven, he came home, picked up the sefer, and sees this randomly the story. So he said, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if something is similar in this moshav. So he went and he checked it out, and sure enough, didn't say the exact story that happened, but he saw that there was also bizayin of in the press to the rav in the community over here in the Simmons moshav, and figured that must be the reason. And he brought this whole story to Rav Zilberstein and see what he had to say. And he said 100%, you know, it's matches. And the amazing thing, he brought out is that you see, you know, you went and you davened, you fasted, you davened, you went to the kol cell, like Rav Aaron Lake told you to do. And what happened? And you had Siyata Deshmaya that just picked out the sefer, and they found a solution. So that's Siyata Deshmaya Hashem gave you. And he brings here an interesting little maisa that we see that a Talmid Chacham wants to, you know, do things right and do things lishma. Hashem sends him Siyata Deshmaya. There's a sefer, a well-known sefer in Halacha called the Chavas Yair. So he writes in his introduction, where did he get the name from? So his name was Yair. And his grandmother, who raised him, her name was Chava. And he was wondering what to call his sefer. And he gets called up to the Sefer Torah on the one day of Shabbos, whatever, for an Aliyah. And what does the Baal Kore read? And he reads the Pasuk, V'ikrao sam chulei chavos yair ad hayom hazeh. And he's like, wow. He's Aliyah, Chavos Yair. So he says, that's my grandmother's Chava who raised me, and I'm Yair, Chavos Yair. Pasuk in the Torah. And my Aliyah is perfect. So he said, he writes in his introduction, and that's what we call the Sefer Chavos Yair. See, says it's Siyata Deshmaya that goes with a person who learns Lishma and wants to do things at Lishma. We should all be Zoicha to Siyata Deshmaya. And help us in our efforts to bring Torah and covet Shemayim to the world, and Hashem should answer in suit and bring the Goel Tzedek b'mehira bimei.